Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:12 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is January 16th, and it's Martin Luther King Day, so the U.S. markets are shut. The follow-through, or at least the rebound we've seen in China over the course of the last month, has persisted, and it's now above the 200-day moving average. Hasn't quite broken the sequence of lower rally highs just yet, but it is looking more positive, and basically, investors are cheering along the prospect of more money being printed and the fiscal stimulus that China is engaged in. So that's certainly one of the factors. And then it's also, I think, worth paying attention to the smaller cap, the ChinaX index, because that's also now testing the region of the 200-day moving average. It didn't pull back as much as the wider market. It has put in a higher reaction low earlier, and these are the more speculative, higher growth companies. And then we have the renminbi, which has continued to appreciate. And this appreciation paused today and is now right in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So there's potential, at least, for a little bit of pause and consolidation. But this appreciation has also taken some of the pressure off of regional currencies. So then, if we think about the Indonesian rupiah, it's really strengthened significantly over the last week and was stronger again in here today, but it's in the region of the 200-day moving average. This is the first area of potential resistance. Then, if we look at the Malaysian ringgit, it had broken down to new lows in the fourth quarter of 22, and since then has rebounded. It's back stronger than the 4.5 level and continues to appreciate. So this is looking like a failed downside break. And then the Singapore dollar is right at the upper side of its range. So the dollar is right down testing the lower side of its range. And it's a 7-year process of ranging. So we have a short-term oversold condition for the dollar, and there's the potential at least that we're going to see at least a pause in consolidation around this 130 area versus the Singapore dollar. Now, when we think about the broader ASEAN sector, then the US dollar denominated MSCI ASEAN index has quite clearly cleared the region of the MA, and it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. So when we think then about the outlook, well, emerging markets have better valuations. So that at least is more attractive. The PE on the MSCI ASEAN index is 14 and it yields about 3%. Now, if we contrast that with the S&P 500, which has a PE of 18, almost 19, and a yield of 1.69, well, then there's obviously a valuation pickup, and that is largely attributed to the tech sector in the US. So then the deciding factor for many investors is the valuation in emerging markets in Europe, for that matter, has been more attractive, but there hasn't been any reason to go in and buy it. And then the dollar has pulled back, so then that has weighed on the viability of having investments in the US for foreign investors. And the dollar is oversold in the short term, so it's quite likely that we're going to get a little bit of pause here. So I think this is particularly relevant. We've had a good size rebound in risk assets, and the VIX index today was up a full point. Now, that is despite the fact that US markets are shut. So, this has been a quite significant rebound in volatility, and it does suggest that this rather impressive move on the upside that we've seen for risk assets over the course of the last week is looking a little tired. But there's no real evidence yet that it is over, so I think it is. Well, at least I've introduced a stop on leveraged positions simply because I think this pop in the VIX is something that at least a warning shot that we should be paying attention to. Now, gold prices were in mildly negative territory in here today, and there's no questioning that there is a short-term overbought condition, and it's coming back up into the region of 2000, and that's a potential area of resistance. This is, I think, a potential area, or at least we're approaching a potential area of resistance. I think it would be quite likely to see at least some pause and consolidation before gold can break successfully on the upside. Then let's also take a look at copper. The price today was in negative territory, not in an especially dynamic manner, but since it was up for consecutive days, then it could easily pull back into the $4 area and still look like a bullish trend overall. And then let's also pay attention to some of these other industrial resources. So aluminium prices were up in a very dynamic manner last week, clearing the 200-day moving average, having bounced from the 1,000-day. And this is very clear evidence of a higher reaction low. So that's really rather positive. Then let's just keep going and look at some of these other ones. So lead has also bounced, and certainly a very volatile week, but closed well off those lows. And then tin has also been stronger in here and is now back above the 25,000 level. So it had certainly dipped back down into this range, but has subsequently rebounded in really quite emphatic fashion. So this is suggesting at least a low of medium-term significance has already been found. Now, we are short-term overbought, so I don't think anyone could be too surprised that there's going to be some consolidation in the near future. But this has been a very big pop on the upside, so it's certainly confirming support in the 20,000 area. What it's also helping to suggest is that investors really do want to get back in, and that the size of the declines that we've seen from those peaks in early 2020 have perhaps run their course already, and most of those advances have already been unwound. And it's not like there isn't going to be some form of new demand for commodities. When we think for that, for example, just how many new armaments are going to have to be built as a result of running down of inventories in the Ukraine. And then you have countries like Japan and South Korea that are looking to boost their militaries in an effort to forestall aggression from China. So there's certainly going to be a greater pace of rearmament going on over the coming years. Now let's also think about how bond yields are performing. We can definitely see that the low in the stock market occurred around the same time as the peak in the bond market, and the 10-year yield is around 3.5%. Now, we had a lot of enthusiasm over the last week that we're right at the peak of the interest rate hiking cycle, and that it would be inevitable that yields were going to continue lower, that interest rates will eventually be cut, and we'll go back into the liquidity-fueled bull market of the last few years. And that is very much on the assumption that we're going to have a clear reversal in inflationary pressures. But the 10-year yield has not yet been able to sustain a move down through the 3.5% level, and this is still a reasonably consistent uptrend, where the size of the ranges are about 100 basis points. I'm in the camp that we should expect a deflationary shock, that it is more likely than not there will be a recession confirmed before the end of the year. But we are still in this Goldilocks stage where efforts have been underway to control inflation, and now they're bearing fruit without a big drop-off in economic growth. And the inverted yield curve remains inverted, but is not yet pushing higher. So central banks are unlikely to cut interest rates until they have a clear reason to. And that's not likely to be manifested until we see jobless rates trending higher. And they're certainly around the same level now as they were prior to the big spike in joblessness in 2020. But the more we zoom in, the more we can see that we did get up to a peak of 260,000, and it has been coming down for most of the last couple of months. So we're now at a point where the number of jobless should start to stabilize. Of course, if it were to contract even further, then it would be hard to argue why the Fed would really cut back on raising interest rates, even if inflationary pressures have been vanquished. So I think we're in for a little bit of pause and consolidation, at least. And the impressive rebound we've had on Bitcoin, where it is now back above the 20,000 level, and we had really quite dynamic activity last week. Well, it's also at the first area of potential resistance, and so is Ethereum, as right back in the region of the peaks from November. So I do think that there's the scope here, that having had a big rebound over the last 10 days, that we're more likely than not to see a little bit of pause and consolidation. And a lot is going to hinge on exactly what happens in terms of interest rates. Obviously, everybody wants to see inflation coming back down. And we definitely have evidence that some of the commodity price inflation is moderating. This is especially true of natural gas in Europe. And the UK natural gas price has pulled back down through the 1,000-day moving average for the first time since the beginning of 2021. So this is a meaningful event and suggests that the energy crisis that has been worrying everyone for the last year is abating. Natural gas prices in the US were in positive territory today, so certainly some evidence of support building beginning to come back in here, even if the sequence of lower rally highs is still intact and continue to hold a long position there. When we then look at some of these other stock markets, the Australian ASX 200 has pushed on and put in a new recovery high and coming back into the region of the 7,500 level. And the Australian dollar has also broken its sequence of lower rally highs. So there's certainly the potential here that with China opening back up and commodity demand beginning to recover, then that should be beneficial for the resources sector, for resources exporters. Whitehaven Coal continues to hold the region at the 200-day moving average and bounced today from around the 8 level. And that's a major coal exporter. Then let's think about the UK. What the Sunak government are suggesting is to introduce more rules on crowd control, and they want to prevent small groups of people from discomforting large numbers of people. It does beg the question what they will do when large numbers of people want to discomfort large, even larger numbers of people. And with teachers threatening to go on strike, nurses already on strike, rolling strikes from transportation workers, then it's quite obvious that the union representative or represented portion of the workforce is clearly agitating for better pay and conditions, and much of the rest of the workforce doesn't have that opportunity. But then you have the Bank of England saying that the shock from the truss budget has now been unwound, and the ASX, which is the FTSE All Share, is right in the region of its all-time peaks. and it's been ranging below 4,400 since 2018. So this is already a very lengthy range, but perhaps more important than that, it's a very lengthy range in the upper side of an even lengthier range. And that would suggest that this is just a step in an otherwise big bull market. But of course, the big weightings in the FTSE are banks, pharmaceuticals, and particularly resources companies. So these are significant weightings for AstraZeneca, Shell, HSBC, and Unilever. I had a conversation with an analyst or a banker, I guess a banker would probably be the better term, from Standard Chartered in Saudi Arabia. We were chatting about the outlook for resources and for renewable energy, and he's a representative in charge of carbon emissions and renewable investments. And I was asking the question about how on earth we're going to see enough of cars produced for everyone when we're already looking at a supply constrained environment for copper and lithium. And he didn't question that there's going to have to be significant new investment in mines to satisfy that enforced demand. This isn't quite the same thing as China entering the global economy in the early 2000s and harnessing the productive capacity of about 500 million people. Didn't really matter what they were what they had to spend on commodities because it was being put to much more productive uses. But then, if we're going to substitute already efficient production of internal combustion engines for the electric vehicle fuel cycle, well, isn't that less efficient? So then there's an implied additional cost because of the less efficient way that that's going to be done. And particularly if the intermittent sources of electricity are substituted. And the only way then to substitute for that is to change the ownership model. And when I said that I think that people are being they're being reconditioned to think of themselves as cash flows, and his retort was, "Oh, people love that. They'd much prefer to pay for convenience than to own an asset." And that, of course, is the basis for the sharing economy. But there is, of course, the alternative, and it is that works as long as you can pay. And what happens when you can't pay any longer? Then having an asset, something that you own yourself, can really be something that you can rely on. And the example that I was thinking of is that, often when somebody loses their, and I guess this comes from living in Los Angeles, but when people lose their accommodation, well, then they can stay in their car. But if you don't own a car and you've been relying on Uber, well, you can't live in your Uber. You can't. So these, I think, are significant issues. And that's just a trivial example that with rising interest rates, with a supply constrained environment, then hard assets provide security. And this is most particularly going to be the case as we move into a more geopolitically tense environment, where there's going to be a lot of investment in armaments, which couldn't be more physical. And I think that's likely to be a significant trend over the course of the next decade. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.